He was born in Switzerland and started riding at the age of 9. His greatest achievement was in London 2012, where he competed at his third Olympic Games. He was the only rider who jumped clear in the two final rounds of the competition and won the individual gold medal. He was the winner of the World Cup final several times and the winner of the European Championship in 2023. Many dreams came true thanks to his hard work, talent and patience. This weekend he's competing at the Dutch Masters. I'm talking today to the very talented Steve Gerda.
Hello and thank you for listening to Horse Heroes. In this podcast, Floor Schoonemakers of EHS Communications takes you on an equestrian odyssey around the globe, talking to some of the leading entrepreneurs and sporting superstars that shape the wonderful world of horsemanship. Listen to these touching tales from amazing horsemen and women as they share their open-hearted horse stories in fun, frank, passion-filled one-on-one conversations. So sit back, kick off your boots and enjoy the ride.
Hello and thank you for your time. I'm very happy that you made some time to talk to me this afternoon.
Very welcome.
How are you?
Yes, I'm very good. It's always always nice, you know. It is also a part of our lifestyle that I like to be able to travel in very nice places. We are very lucky to have amazing organizers all around the globe. That patrols like here in Sertogenbosch, and it's always an absolute pleasure to come here and compete and enjoy life, enjoy our horses in places like here.
Yes, I imagine, but you travel a lot and you have a big team with you here now in Den Bosch?
No, right here I have only 3 horses, so my groom, longtime groom Emma, came for the horses, and some of my owners came, but otherwise I came on my own, and family stayed at home this week.
They stayed at home. And before this show, did you had another show last weekend as well?
Yeah, I was in Italy last week for 2-star shows. And before that, we were 3 weeks in Spain with 20 horses, with my wife who was competing as well. And there we had 7 people of our staff with, so a big organization, but yeah, you know, every week is different, so what's nice about it, but when you're able to come up at a place like this and to visit all those places that we are able to visit, I wouldn't change my life for any others.
No, I would like to hear more about your life. So what we do, as always, in this podcast, we start at the beginning. Can you tell me where you grew up and how?
I grew up in a little place in Switzerland, in the Jura, it's called. It's more of a, let's say, farming place. My dad was a rider, obviously, so we had horses at home. And this is where I grew, so where other kids have a ball in the garden, we had horses, and since very little I always loved spending time in the stables, and always trying to get every moment I could to spend this time with the people working in the stable and then with the horses. And very little I started riding already, and I don't remember when I was 3 and sitting on a horse, but I saw some pictures and back in the time, and my parents told me that this is always where they saw me the most happy, is when I was around horses. So this was the beginning.
And you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have one brother. He's called Yannick. He wasn't as keen on horses as I was, except when I was 9 or 10 years old, my parents entered me in my first competition, local competitions, and then because my dad was a little bit known in the region where we were, they wrote an article in the newspaper about it. So my brother got very jealous.
Oh.
And he said he also wanted to be in the newspaper. So the show was 5 days later,
yeah,
and he started to ride, and that very first day, and competed 5 days later at the competition, which was not such a good idea. But he had his name in the newspaper, and then he did keep on riding for a little while until he was 15 or so, but just once or twice a week, just for the for the fun. And then he quit riding, and he follows me. He takes care of my social media, so he's very, very close to what I do. And he has a bigger company now. He's in the internet web business, and he's very successful in what he does. And like I say, he's also doing a few shows in the social media and taking care of this part of my in my life. And but he's not riding anymore.
He's not riding anymore. But no. Good that he grew all the way with you, the way you are now.
Yeah.
But then you started with horses straight away, never ponies.
No, never pony. I have to say that I believe pony can be a good school for kids, but it need to be done well.
Mm-hmm.
And in Switzerland, the pony section is not very good. It's better now, but back in the time, pony was just about racing over the jumps, and my dad was not a big fan of that. So from the beginning, he said, "I want you to sit on a horse," and I actually never jumped a class with a pony.
Wow!
So the first jump I took was on the back of a horse, and I believe anyway for me it was a good decision that my dad took, because you can probably learn to ride well on a pony, but you can also take really bad habits, and I didn't have to go through that, and I think that this has helped me at the beginning of my career.
But you were 9.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking my son is 8 and my daughter is 11.
Yeah.
And she has a little bit of a bigger pony, rides sometimes on the horse, but that's really quite impressive if you started.
I believe when you don't know of something else, it's just usual, normal,
that's
you know.
Also
so
true.
Yeah.
But you said your father was a rider, but he was, what did he do?
He competed at 2 Olympics, a few European Championships. He had, I think, 2 medals with the team, with the Swiss team and the European Championships. Competed at the World Equestrian Games. He won a few Grand Prix. So in Switzerland, he was one of the best Swiss riders. And especially, he was the first Swiss... We have 3 parts in Switzerland, the Italian part, but especially the 2 biggest parts are the German part and the French part. And the biggest success in Switzerland, in most of the parts, so not only in sport, but also in business, belongs to the German part. But especially in the sport, where most successful athletes are coming from the German part. And in the equestrian, my dad was really the first one from the French part who made his way to the top and to the Swiss team, to the national team. And it's actually funny to see that now it's actually the other way around in equestrian, where most of the members of the team are coming from the French part.
Yeah, wow.
So I believe he was one of the pioneers in that direction.
Yeah, for sure, if you explain like this. And your mother?
And my mom, she was riding for the fun. She did a few 140s. She actually met my dad at the show, but she was helping in a dentist. That's what she studied, and then she stopped riding. She quit riding when she had us, my brother first, and a year later me, and then she dedicated her life to her family and to her sons, and did everything as the best mother in the world to take care of us and our family.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what mothers do. Most of them. Try to.
Yeah.
And then, so you went to school, of course, back in the days. Was there something that you thought, if I grow up, this is what I want to be? Or you already knew I want to be?
I believe my answer was always, I want to be a rider. In anything, when they ask you what you want to be later, I want to be a rider.
You already knew so young.
Yeah, but the truth is, I was also playing a lot of football.
Ah.
And football was actually more fun than riding when I was 11, 12, 13 years old. I was not so bad at it, so I had also some success at football. And when it's 5 o'clock in the evening after school and you choose between, going to to play with friends, with a bunch of friends, to play football and train, or go on your own in a little cold, dark indoor riding. There was a few months where I had more fun going play with football with my friends than on my own in a cold indoor. And then I must have been 13 or 14, where it ended up that I had 3 trainings a week with a football. I was riding every day, and I had a competition every weekend, a show and the game.
Yeah.
And it came to a point where my parents told me I have to choose one or the other. They didn't tell me I have to stop football. I can choose football if I want, but I have to choose one and do one 100% and not 2 sports 50%. And even though maybe I would have think that I would go for football because I had more fun, it didn't take a second to answer, and I said I want to ride. So I think somewhere it was in me that my life was going to be about riding.
But you had talent for football as well.
I was okay. Yeah, I was in the selection of the French part of
so
Switzerland,
you could have been
under 15. No, definitely not. And I also had after a few health issues that were not problems for the riding, but that probably would have not been strong enough then for a sport like football.
Wow. But then, okay, you said you were 13, 14 years old. Then you go to another school.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do for school?
I really didn't want to go. When I was done with school, I just wanted to go and ride. But then my mother was very strict on having something in the hand before I start riding. My dad a little bit less, but he wanted to show me not only the nice side of the horse sport, also how tough it can be.
Mm-mm.
So, he sent me to a few hard places where I had to learn it the hard way. But every time I was coming home, I said, oh, when can I go again?
But what is an example? What is learn the hard way for you?
Well, they sent me in Swiss German, where I didn't speak German yet, obviously, with a profession in a professional stable by Beat and Markus Mendli. I had to start at 5 in the morning, mock out.
That's hard way.
Then I had to ride 10 horses, and I had to clean all the horses, and I had to do the stable in the evening, and I was on my own, left alone in a room where I didn't know how to cook, or I didn't have a car to go. The next shopping center was 4 kilometers away, where I had to go with the bicycle and then come back, and then I was shouted at because obviously I was doing a lot of mistakes. I wasn't good enough yet to ride the horses, but they gave me a chance, and it was the tough way, but this is what made me what I am today, and I don't regret one bit. As I say, I came home and I had lost I don't know how much weight, and my parents were like,
oops.
Yeah, okay, did you like it? I said, yeah, can I go again next holiday,
You sure?
Yeah, really, I loved it. I loved every bit of it, and I started high school because my mother wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
But after 1 year and those experience, I did tell them, I said, look, mom and dad, if one day, because they were afraid that one day something would happen to me, not especially that I wouldn't be good enough, but maybe a health problem or something, that what are you gonna do then? And I told them, look, if I cannot leave run horses, I won't be happy in life anywhere. So whatever paper I will have, if it's to end up working in an office or whatever job, if it's not around horses, I will not be a happy person. So, just let me be around horses and I'll be happy. And they talked with the manager of the school, and they, motivate my parents and told them if that's what he wants, he'll always do something out of his life if he has this will. So let him take the decision, and they agreed then on me quitting school and giving it a go in the horse world.
How old were you?
15.
Oh, really? You were 15?
Yeah.
Wow. But yeah, I mean, if you have parents who are so dedicated already, then they understand.
Yeah.
It's their fault. They gave you the genes.
Yes. Yes.
And then what did you do when you were 15?
Then, I started, my dad did something unbelievable. He stopped riding himself. He was still having a successful career and... from one day to the next, he quit riding. He didn't keep his best horses for me. He sold them, but he gave all his time and all his experience to me to help me. And I was then still a junior, and just then, you know, we did the juniors, the young riders, and it was good. It was good. I did my first Nations Cup. I had, for my age, I had good success, but we had, the next step was missing then, you know. I was good in what I was, in the level that I was doing at the time, but we didn't really see what's next.
No.
Because I had big dreams. Big dreams.
Not already?
Yeah, big dreams. I was seeing the Rodrigo Pessoas being young and, you know, winning all these Grand Prix and the Ludger Berbaum and John Whittaker. And
so those were your idols?
Yes, and I said I want to beat them.
Wow.
But yeah, we didn't really see it happen where we were, you know. It's quite a little bit left alone place in Switzerland when not so many things happen, so you don't really get contacts to horse owner or to clients, you know, to give you horses. So we're doing it what we could, but I did a few years where I was a little bit stuck there.
but you said your father did something incredible. He quit everything for you.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
But did you, because you were quite young,
yeah,
but could you really talk to him about your dreams, and could he really see that already?
Yes, he was, he was absolutely there to, you know, he was there the whole ways, and he knows what I wanted, but he also knew how difficult it was. That's also why he was sending me to a lot of different places as well. I traveled to Germany and to some different trainers to learn and to see a lot of different things, a lot of different side of the sport. And he just basically was always there, and he was willing as much as me to make my dream happen.
Is your father still alive?
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Wow, but it sounds amazing.
Yes.
If you can share that
of course.
With your father. And, you had the dream. He saw your dream.
Yeah.
Then what happened?
Then, as I say, I had a few years where we were a little bit stuck, like, let's say, up to, at the time, it was not stars, like 2, 3, 4, 5 stars, the shows. They were like A, B, C, A being the main show. So we were like in, we were doing a lot of national shows up to 150, and then we're doing CSIB, we were doing Nations Cup, like what we call today, like AAF Nations Cup, like, you know, in the East countries and stuff like this. And they were good. We had success. But as I say, I wanted more. I wanted more. And one day I remember I was going in my truck driving to Zagreb to the show. And I had a phone call of, what I can call back in the time my trainer, Beat Mendley, because he's the one I was training the most with. And he told me that he, through a mutual friend, Mark Souls, was actually a Dutch vet.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
Yeah,
I know him.
Jan Tops was looking for a rider to replace Rolf Göran Bengtsson. So, big shoes to fill.
Yes.
And they were thinking of me. So, I spoke with my dad, obviously, and didn't take long to say we give it a go. So my dad came with me, we went to Holland, we met Jan, we sat for a few minutes, and I had signed the contract to start the job in the next few weeks. So I told my father that I was gonna go there, and I was not gonna come back home. or what we called home at the time. We had a stable, we had like 30 boxes, but it was more because of the geographic situation that I said, if I come back to Switzerland one day, I will not come back here because it's not the right place if you want to be successful in sport. So my dad sold the stable, but was of course very happy and very nice also to let me go, to let me fly with my own wings.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I left to Holland and I started my new job by Tops, where he brought me to a whole different level.
How old were you?
I was 20.
And he brought you
19,
to...
19 or 20, yeah.
And then everything really started.
Yeah, then everything really started. I had, of course, a complete different category of horses than under the saddle. And there was one thing when I arrived, as I said, Rolf was, I think, number two or three in the world. I was really lucky that Rolf stayed there for like an extra 2 or 3 months.
Yeah, to help you.
Yeah, and he was unbelievable with me. I will never forget how helpful he was to me. And yeah, then the new part of my career started, and I had, as I say, better horses and access to better shows, and I was able to slowly climb on the ranking, make myself a name on the international scene, and success started to come along.
Do you remember a special horse from that time?
Yes, it's probably for me the best horse in history of show jumping. His horse was called Tepic La Silla. He was a horse of Alfonso Romo, who was at the time a close partner to Jan Tops. And I was really, really lucky that he gave me the ride on that horse for just a few months. I remember we were in Aachen, and like 2 months later was the European Championship in the Nauerschingen. And he told me, if you want to take the horse next week, you can ride him. And if it goes well, you can keep him until the Europeans. And the week after, I ended up winning the Grand Prix, our first Grand Prix together. And then he's only jumped clear round up to the Europeans. And we had a medal with the team. It was the only double clear in the team competition, and was leading towards the final. And we had a really unlucky fault, the really last round, who brought us from the first place to the sixth place. Oh. But still, it was it's the hardest moment in my career. But at the same time, it's the moment who, yeah, really made myself a name and gave me confidence that I was good enough to stay in that sport.
But you said it's the hardest moment. Mm-hmm. Why was it the hardest moment?
For a few reasons, I would say. First of all, I thought, will I ever have a horse like this again? And will I ever be in that position again to win a championship? Because those championships are so hard to win. And there's so many good riders, so many good horses, and will I ever be again in the position to win it, you know, to enter the last round knowing if you jump clear, you win. I thought I had given my chance away, and that's probably why it was such a big relief last year when I was able to win the Europeans.
Yes.
And was able then to, because it was the only moment of my career, was still waking me up sometimes in nightmare, you know, that the Nauerschingen. And that's the only mistake we had, the only pole done we had with the horse the whole time we were together. So it was a hard time, but that helped me grow and made the moment last year in Milano even more special.
Because I've seen, of course, the videos and everything of how much relief and happiness
exactly.
That was. Oh, but that was the reason. Mm-hmm. But you really had nightmares.
Yes.
About this.
Yes, really. I'm really bad with that. I can be at a 2 or 3 star shows, and if I don't ride good and everyone done in the Grand Prix, it takes me 1 or 2 nights to overcome that. And that mistake with Tepic in the last round was really hard to swallow, and sometimes didn't make it harder to move forwards, you know. I was able to move forwards in my career, But it did sometimes really tick me, and in the night sometimes I could wake up and have a nightmare about that pole. Yeah.
But do you also think that maybe because of that moment you have been more focused and more whatever because of
1,000%. Yes. 1,000%. I've learned something very very interesting and very helpful from Eric Lamaze one time, and he told me mistake of many riders is they like to watch the video of their good runs. Mm-mm. You don't learn anything of the good runs, so buy the video of the bad runs, and this is where you learn.
Yeah.
And it sounds maybe a little bit easy, but this is actually how it is, and yes. It is in the tough times that you learn the most about what you could have done better and what you still have to improve, and this is those times that make you move forwards and make you a better athlete.
Yeah, sure. But then after this time, what happened?
Well, after this time, I had a few very good horses again. I took part to my first Olympic Games, and
at a young age.
Yes, and also the horse was only 8 years old, so it was pretty amazing, and we had a good result. We were fourth or fifth with the team. I don't remember, but very close, one pole away from a jump off for the bronze medal. And I had success in World Cups. I did my first World Cup final. I won a few Grand Prix, so everything was going well. But the downside was the horses ended up being sold, and which was absolutely okay because it was my job to make the horse better, so yeah. They can be sold. So I knew I was in a dealing stable, but for me personally, it was hard to leave that because I see what I do as a sport and not as a business, and the relationship that I like to create with the horse is what drives me every day more than the success. And to have to say goodbye to those horses was always really hard, and was for me also something that was somehow in a way for my career. Because I believe that in order to have the success that I was aiming for, mm-mm. I was able to create a better relationship and longer relationship with my horses. So the last amazing horse I had was called Till from Palitterland. And when he got sold, and I said, okay, I go also. And that's where I decided to leave Holland. And
how long did you stay in Holland?
3.5 years. Mm-mm. 3.5 years.
Yeah, but if I hear you talking about the horses, then and that your relationship with the horse is more important than the success, then there were a lot of heartaches, yeah. I guess, yes. In that yes. 3.5 years yes. if the horses get sold.
Yeah, exactly.
What happened after Holland?
I stayed for a few days in Belgium by a friend, and because I really didn't know what I was gonna do. And then I had a phone call from Mr. Onishenko from Ukraine. He was at the time doing a team, or let's say buying some riders to ride for Ukraine. And he wanted me in his team. My best friend Gregory Watley did the move and was riding for Ukraine and for Mr. Onishenko. Obviously he had fantastic horses. Mm-mm. And he asked me, and I said, yes, I do that. So I took my bags and I went to Belgium, and I started my new job for Alexander, knowing that I had to give my pass away. So it was beginning of the year. I remember we went to Spain to the Sunshine Tour for 5 weeks. Had a lot of horses, a lot of very good horses. I started to learn to know them. And then we went to Arezzo for 2 weeks. Another tour in Italy. Mm-hmm. That the horses started to win a little bit, and I thought, oh, this looks good. I got a selection for the Nations Cup in La Bolle. And then in the meantime, Alexander came to the stable and said that we have to sign the contract, and I had to give my pass at the same time so that he can start the paperwork for my Ukraine pass.
Oh, you had to become...
Yes, 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 yes. And as the other riders did, no, they had a very good team, but they were Belgium or German, and they changed nationality. I knew I was going to have to do that, and I got money for that, good money. Mm-mm. But I couldn't. I was in front of the paper. I had a pen in my hand, but I couldn't sign.
How old were you? You remember that?
23.
And really, and they offered you so much money?
Yes, yes. I had the money already. But I couldn't sign something.
What happened?
I have two person that actually I don't know if I should call them friends because they absolutely not of my generation. But two person that I really look up to that called me. Obviously, I had a lot of phone calls of people because they knew I was gonna do that. My family was, you know, as a family, just supportive. Do whatever you think is right for you, we'll support you.
Really?
Yes. And those two people, I don't know if I should name them, but the one was Alban Poudret, he's the organizer of the show in Geneva, and a journalist as well. And the other one was Ludger Berbaum.
Yeah.
And they told me, basically, Steve, if you want to do it, do it. You'll have success, you're a good rider, but think twice. And I don't know if unconsciously this made me think different, but the truth is when I was in front of this paper and ready to sign, I couldn't do it. Something was telling me, no, you can't give your pass away, you can't. So I don't know if it's because of these wise words I heard from this two great person, but I just couldn't do it.
But they just said...
They didn't say don't do it, but they say think twice, you'll have other opportunities, are you really willing to ride for Ukraine, and you know Switzerland is a great country in show jumping and you are Swiss and this and that, and don't think just now about the horses you're gonna get now, you're gonna get other chances and so and so. So yeah, I didn't sign. I apologized to Alexander. I say,
oh god, that must have been a nice conversation.
Yeah, I say I can't.
Was he very angry?
He wasn't angry, but he did tell me, okay, but you give the money back and by tomorrow morning you're gone off my stable.
No.
Yes, which is okay, it's fair enough.
Yeah, but straight away, you're straight not away. Signing, go,
no, exactly.
Money back, leave.
Yes, yes. So I gave the money back.
A lot of money,
yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. And I called my brother. And I say, you have to
help
me. I have to leave there by tomorrow morning. I don't have much to take with, but can you come and pick me up? So he drove all night, and in the morning we said goodbye and we left together.
Did you ever speak to him again?
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, he didn't do anything wrong. You know, I knew the conditions before I went. So actually, if there is someone to blame, it was me, you know, because I said yes.
And then
then I turned around. So he had no reason to be upset with me. I had no reason to be upset with him, sorry. So yeah, I left.
Wow.
Back to Switzerland
with your brother.
With my brother.
And then?
Nothing.
And your father said, welcome home, son.
Well, we had no... They had an apartment, but nothing with horses.
No more horses.
No more horses, no. No horse, no stable, nothing.
Oh, wow.
So on the way home, I did a few phone calls, and a good friend of my dad, it's called Jörg Notz, he's a horse dealer in Switzerland. And I had him on the phone, and... He said, you can come anytime, and we see what it brings. So I went there. I had one groom that followed me, and I told her, I said, Heidi, I don't have any money to pay you, so take a holiday, what you have. And the day that I have something a little bit stable, a little bit nice, and some money again, I'll call you again, and if you're still free, then you can come. So, yeah, I started there. The really next day, I went straight away to the stable in Kerzers in Switzerland. And I rode a few dealing horses of Jörg. I was smoking out again. I had a little studio there at the stable. And I was riding 4, 5, 6 years old on local shows and for a few months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then?
And then...
I see you smiling.
Then, you know, I was really happy. It was... I liked what I was doing. I was enjoying. And took maybe 3 or 4 months. Till then I was thinking... started to miss a little bit the big sport.
Mm-mm.
I started to miss a little bit the big sport. I had my good friends that, you know, my good friends obviously are riders as well, so they were doing the good shows and I was watching them on TV, and it started to itch a little bit, and I was talking to them and I was like, oh, it would be nice to go again. And so the at the time I had one horse that my dad sent me that was called Trezor. I could jump like up to 150 nationals with him, but otherwise was just doing local shows. And my dad was, he was actually team chef of the Ukraine team, believe it or not, especially because of Gregory, who's always been one of our best friends.
Mm.
And he called me, he was at a show in Monaco, and he missed his flight on Saturday, or didn't get a flight home on Saturday. So on Sunday morning, he was having a coffee and he met Mr. Piaget, who was a Swiss person that my dad knew very well. And they ended up being just beside at the coffee. And he asked me, how is life and this? And asked my dad, what is Steve doing? And so and so. And not much. He's trying to build something. He has young horses. He's by Jörg, and they're trying to do something, but it will take time.
Mm-hmm.
Tell him to come to my office this week, and I'll buy him a horse.
Oh, okay.
So my dad called me to tell me about this talk that they had, and I went to Neuchâtel, where Mr. Piaget had an hotel, and we met there. We sat together, and I didn't know him personally. But he told me he was willing to help me, and if I find a horse that I believed could go back in the sport, he would support me. And it took a few weeks. I did a few phone calls, and then I ended up finding Jalice Cassolier. And Mr. Piaget bought her for me, and it was the beginning of a new life and back in business.
You're smiling a lot, yes, when you're telling this.
Yes, because it's pretty amazing that it was, you know, the first one that we bought, and she was known, the mare, but not to be something really special, but she ended up being unbelievable, and that was, I would say, maybe in September.
Mm-hmm.
And in December, she won the Grand Prix in Geneva.
Sure.
So that was amazing. And then from there, then things just started to go better and better, and more horses. And then I moved stables. In the meantime, Heidi had come back to join me and was my groom again. And then we found another stable with a sponsor who was giving us a stable just around Zurich. Had 6 or 7 horses from Mr. Piaget and then some from some other owners. And I started then to create really my own business. And I was in the stable in Zurich for nearly 10 years, where I met also Mr. Schwarzenbach, who then bought Nino for me.
Mm-hmm.
Nino was the next big thing, you know, won the Olympics and then a few other medals along the way. And had a very good time. There in Zurich in that stable, and a lot of success.
But you say very quickly won the Olympics. Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's this is an unbelievable story.
Yeah, I have a feeling I'm a little bit long. That's why I was obviously looking for a horse for the Olympics in London, because Jalisca was too old and not gonna go. She did the Olympics in Hong Kong, where she was 8 or 9 individually, and we had one mistake in the water jump in the second run of the team, because we didn't get a medal.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a good results altogether. And then 2 years before London, I was looking for a horse, and My trainer at the time, Thomas Fuchs, saw his Nino at a show in Germany, and he told me, I saw a very good horse, you should go and try. And I went to try, and I offered him to Mr. Piaget, but he wasn't, you know, he had a lot of success. We had amazing time together, but he was willing to step down a little bit and had some other things he wanted to do in his life. And so I needed to find someone to keep Nino for me. And that's where I had Mr. Schwarzenbach coming in the game. He was the owner of the stable where I was. He was sponsoring me, but not investing in horses. Mm. But Nino is the first horse that is bought ever. And then, Nino was also a long journey. Didn't start very well, but after a few months, or after a year, we started to be competitive. And the first really big, big success was actually here in Zertogenbosch, was second in the World Cup final. And then a few months later, we went to London and we won.
And you won?
Yes.
Crazy. But I mean, that was... Not really. I mean, you don't know, of course, before what's going to...
You don't know before, but I have to say, with the feeling he gave me at the World Cup final, I say when you're a kid, you dream, but when you become professional, it's not dreams anymore, you know, it's goals.
Yes.
And it was a goal for me to win in London, you know, it was just, you don't dream about winning, you have to aim for the win, you know.
Sure.
So I... did everything I could to come in the best possible form with my horse in London, and from the first day he felt really, really good, and I knew that I would have a good chance in the final, and so it went.
Was that the most special moment in your sport career so far?
It's difficult to answer because every win is... It's different.
For different reasons.
For different reasons, exactly. You know, it can be because of the situation, because of the horse, because of what happened just before, or because of the people there, because of many things. So, of course, it's the most important win because it's the one that has brought me, my team, my name in all different level. And not just in the horse sport, but in the sport in general in Switzerland. And so, yes, it is the win with the biggest impact. But I wouldn't say that it was like the most emotional win. Like, for example, when I won the Grand Prix in Geneva, after what we went through with Jaliska, you know, the mare that's the closest to my heart ever, was much more emotional, for example. So, and I had other great wins, whether at championships, at World Cup finals, or in very important Grand Prix that have been, for some different reason, but I would say more emotional than London was.
But
that's one downside of the... Sorry to interrupt.
No.
One downside with the Olympics is that if I look backwards, I have a feeling that the victory is a little bit stolen from you, because the only moment I had for me was I was lucky there was a jump off with Gerko and Kian, and these 10 minutes or 15 minutes were for me, where I could do whatever I wanted. And from the time that the class is over, there is, you know, Swiss Olympic who comes around you and they say, you go there for the press conference, you go there. Then on the podium, you sit like this, you look there, you do this, then you come off the podium, then you go in the car, we wait you, the anti-doping control, and then can I go and see my family? I haven't, the only person
oh, you
I
hadn't,
no,
you didn't
I hadn't
see
seen yet, no. Because, you know, with accreditation and so, it's very difficult at the Olympics, and they were at the pub 100 meters from the stables, or 200 meters. Hmm. And probably the first 3 hours, I didn't see them. And
oh,
they're
God.
Actually the people you want to share
of
that
course.
With.
Of course, of
you
course. Know?
And then I got to see them for 15 seconds. And then back with Swiss Olympic, back in the bus, back in the village, back to the, you know, conference, press and all this. and then have to go to the Swiss house for the dinner. Next day, 7 o'clock, the car is waiting because you have to go to do pictures with your medal in London City. Then you go, they bring you straight away to the airport in the plane where everybody was already there. You land in Zurich, big show when you arrive, you know, they wait for you again, all the journalists, all your friends, family, and the people you want to see are there,
yeah.
But you don't have time for them because you have to go to the official things, you know, and yeah.
So it's more like a business,
yes,
agreement,
a little bit,
almost.
A little bit, you know, and some other wins, you're just there, you have your friends,
you feel the audience,
yes,
you've heard the horror.
Exactly,
yeah, for sure.
Exactly. And this is why I have sometimes the feeling that I haven't really enjoyed that gold medal as much as I wish I had.
Yeah, I can imagine. But that's something you never think about. You're
yes.
saying it now, but it yeah. I don't think people can even understand what happens.
And I really
after.
Don't want to complain about it, you know. But,
no, but it's not
it's
complaining.
Difficult
but it's
difficult because this medal is actually bigger than you, you know. It's not just you, but, you know, like, I was so excited to go back to my village. They were waiting for me, and it was like 2 weeks later, and streets
and
were
probably
full.
There you
it was
realized.
Crazy. Yeah, it was crazy. But again, the whole afternoon, the whole evening, I didn't have 1 minute to talk with really to do what I want to do and to have the fun I want to have with my friends and my family, you know, because everybody wants something from you, which is nice. Also, and especially nice for the sport, and I own that to the sport, because if you get so much, you also have to give something back to them. But it is difficult to, as I say, it is bigger than you, this medal, and this is, everybody has the feeling that they have a little bit of this, and this is why it's so special, but difficult to really enjoy it too.
Yeah, this is really actually interesting to hear, because I don't think many people realize all of this, what comes with the gold.
Yeah.
But what I like to know, you mentioned your really special mare mm-hmm. a few times. Is it your most special horse?
Yeah, she's the one that means the most, because she was had a very strong relationship with her. So did Heidi, a longtime groom. She was very special to us because we know what we honor. And we knew that if we hadn't met her, we, you know, would still jump 120 and 125 around at local shows with young horses. And thanks to her, we were in the spotlight. We had success. We were doing the best shows, visiting the nicest shows, the nicest venue, and being successful. And we know that, you know, it was only because of that mare. So she really changed our life. And she's the beginning of everything. If we hadn't had her in our life, we wouldn't be here today, probably. So she's the beginning of everything, and that's why probably she's the one that's the closest to us. And she had a very, very lovely personality as well, so it was easy to fall in love with her.
Yeah, she was like a real
yes,
mare.
Very sweet.
What
very
kind of
sweet.
Person?
She was very, very sweet. Also very sweet.
Yeah, but it's important that you can have a relation with horses,
yes.
like how you talk about her now. You also won back then here at the Dutch Masters one time in a Grand Prix. Was that with her or was it with another horse?
No, I was second a few times, but I never won.
Oh, you never won? Mm-hmm. But you've been to the Dutch Masters a lot.
A lot, yeah.
Do you have a clue how many times you've
been? No, I don't know.
There?
I don't know. I don't really, you know, it's rare that I look backwards.
Yeah,
so
of course. I mean,
you know, I'm always looking for the next one, you know, like whatever happens tomorrow, I'm going to think, I have to make it again next week and, you know, next year, and want to come again and be competitive next year. So those shows are so big that you want to come every year and be good at them.
But you have... I mean, the Dutch Masters is now for a few years one of the Rolex Grand Slam mm-hmm. venues. You've done, did you do all of them? Aachen,
yes.
Geneva,
yes.
Fruit Meadows here. And yeah. tell me, how is it? What's it like? What's the differences?
Okay, I would say that the fact that they are when they created this Grand Slam, the fact to pick those four shows doesn't change anything in the way I see those shows, because they were picked because they were the best. So they were the best before the Grand Slam was there. What it changes is that, you know, if I have people, I meet people that are not really into our industry, into our sport, when I tell them I go to Sertogenbosch, I go to Aachen, I go to Calgary or to Geneva, they don't make a difference to any other show, any other place. Maybe they are, where is it? You know, is it in Holland or in Belgium, or, you know, Aachen or in Germany? Yeah. But if I tell them I'm going to the Grand Slam in Sertogenbosch, in the Grand Slam in Aachen, then you can see that out. It must be important, you know, as a Grand Slam, and then you make straight out the comparison with the other sport, like tennis and golf, and that's why it has such a big impact on the fans around the world.
How many Grand Slams did you compete already? You know that?
Every single one.
All of them?
Yeah, yeah. I got a prize for that in Geneva last year. That must be 36, I think. So every single one. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God!
Actually, you know, everybody's like surprised, but I'm much more surprised that a rider would miss one of them. You know, for me, it's like normal.
Yeah, but you have to be on that you level. Need to,
you need
a
to
horse
be at
on that
level,
level.
And you need to have the horse. But I would never, you know, I would do everything. I live for these kind of shows, you know. They are so special and so good to our sport. I want to be there and I want to be competitive in them. So when I do the plan, the beginning of the year, I know I cannot do all of them, but those four, I want to be there. So yeah. I don't see it as a big achievement, you know. I just see it as a normal thing.
Yeah, but it's totally not
to
normal. It's totally not normal, but it's really, well, pretty cool. You can see you did all of them. But it you mean it's different countries, different atmospheres, but like Dutch Masters, what makes it special to you?
Well, it's very class show. Like, you see any door you enter the event from the outside, it's just another indoor, but as soon you make a few steps in, you see it's really, really class. And the arena is has something special. When you come in it, you can see that, you know, as I would say, most of the shows in Holland, the public is great because they host people, they know what we're doing, they enjoy what we're doing, and they're really behind the rider and horses. And this is something you feel. This is not something you can fake or you can buy, you know. You have it or you don't, and this show has it. And this is why it's a special feeling, a goosebumps feeling when you enter this ring every time.
Yeah, but it's, you know, I am very often, of course, in the audience watching the sport, watching the riders, and then you with a whole group, you feel the excitement of the competition. Yeah. But I always wonder, if you are the rider and you train alone at home, you travel a lot, every time you enter, it's like you're a rock star, a pop star, like all the audience watching you. Does that ever, do you feel that, the audience? Does it make you nervous or does it help?
I don't see it that way because, you know, this is also actually what I like, is people don't come to see me or to see this rider. They come to see our sport.
And but also to see the rider.
Probably, but I see it like this, you know, and always, for me, it's the best rewarding feeling is when I see a sold-out place and a crowd that enjoys to be there and that enjoys seeing those amazing animals doing their job and enjoying their job. And I think this is the, you know, the best that our job has to offer. And when you see that it's rewarded by the people and the audience, this is as good as what sport can give.
But it never made you a bit, does it ever make you nervous if
no.
you go to
no,
the curtains and you're like, whoa.
No, it makes me happy.
Yeah, but you realize that you had your idols when you said when you were a younger boy, you had your idols, I want to beat them.
Yeah.
You are that for a lot of people now. Yeah. You're the idol, of course.
Yeah, the problem is I still feel like a child many times, you know, so I never see me as an old wise guy or idol to anyone. I still feel myself that I'm not as good as I wish I was, and I can still not really think or believe that people will look up to me because they should look up to something much better than me. So this is how I am, and I always say that it's so nice when some young people come to me and say, I want to ride because of you, or because of what you did or what you said or whatever. It's always there are some of the most touching moments that that I have to live, that I have the chance to live. But I don't really see me as you say, as an idol or so, you know. I just do what I love
what
doing.
Love
for me,
to
it's
do.
Natural, because there is no life without horses and without what I do. So I'm thinking a little bit different, and this all come natural to me. And riding is, I don't ask myself many questions, you know. I share my life with those horses every single day. They are the not just a part, they are the biggest part of my life. And so we share things together, and I have a feeling we do and think about things together. So I have maybe a little bit of a different vision of this all.
Yeah, but the life you and the other riders on this level are living, it's really incredible. But what you just already in the beginning said, with all the traveling, and you go everywhere, and sometimes a long time away from the family, and always with the other riders. But you also become maybe that's a sort of family, maybe with all the other riders, or is it? Do you become friends, or do you get really close? Or
well, I I don't have many friends, but I have a few amazing friends, and I rather have a little group, but to know, you know, really who are my friends. And of course, all my friends are riders. All my best friends are riders. My wife is riding.
Yeah.
And I would say that the most important people in my life, they run horses. That's true. But I wouldn't go that far to say that we are like a big family or something, you know. They are a lot of riders that I get along very well, but there are just a few that really are my friends and that I will really share a lot of time with. But family stays family, and that's the only thing that's hard to leave them when I have to go to the show, you know. It's always sad to go, but then on the other hand, it's always so nice to turn back home and see my wife and my daughter. And
you have a daughter?
Yes.
How old is she?
She's going to be 3 in April.
Ah.
Yeah.
And also likes horses.
She loves horses, yeah.
Good. Yeah. So it's going to be the next generation. What in life is most important to you?
Well, obviously, the basic answers, but also the true answers is health is the most. I mean, if you're not healthy, if people around you are not healthy, then nothing really matters. So that's, of course, very, very important. But my family is the most important thing that I have in my life, that I would do anything for, you know, especially, of course, my wife and my daughter. But I cannot put horses away, you know. Horses are, as I say, not just a part of me, but the biggest part of me. So having my horses around me and sharing my life with my horses is the only way that I can, you know, live happy and enjoy my life. So my family and my horses are the most important in my life.
It's funny because people, of course, cannot see your face when you're talking, but when you speak about the horses, you're smiling in your eyes. That's what horses do, of course, to people. You're riding the Grand Slam this weekend with how many horses?
I have 3 horses with me.
So you're going to win.
let's
jinx,
you know,
it.
That's the thing about the Grand Slam. That's also why they're so hard to win, because they're going to be 40 starters, 40 that makes a qualification for the Grand Prix on Sunday. Mm-mm. And out of these 40, for sure, 30 to 35 of them can win. It wouldn't be a surprise, you know, expected winners, basically, you know. So that's why they're so hard to win. But I know that I have an amazing horse, Dynamics. She jumped very good yesterday in the qualifier. She was second and gives me confidence, of course, for the Grand Slam on Sunday. And I'm going to, I don't know about the results. What I know is I'm going to give my best. And I know that my mare is in good shape. So we'll see.
And you had Aker in Geneva with her?
She jumped, yeah. She jumped her first, actually, first ever Grand Slam here last year.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not true. She jumped in Geneva the winter before. That was the first Grand Slam. And she jumped last year here. She was fourth. She jumped double clear. She jumped amazing. That's the biggest class she had jumped at the time. And then she went to Aachen. She was placed in Aachen. She jumped also unbelievable there. And in Geneva, we had a really unlucky fault in the jump-off, but she ended up fourth as well. And she had a break after Geneva, 2 months, and she just started some small classes in Spain the last few weeks, aiming for that specific class, Grand Slam, here in Den Bosch.
So you're ready for it?
Yes,
ready.
I think so.
And what, because of course now this is the Grand Slam, very important weekend to you, what is future plans?
Olympic Games. Yeah.
Do it again.
Yes.
Try.
I will. That's the only thing I can promise.
Okay, good. Okay, very last question for you, because I know we're over an hour and I know you're busy as well. What is the magic about the Rolex Grand Slam?
The best shows and the sport. I think this is probably one thing that is difficult to understand for the audience, the large audience. This is something that for sure has some benefit from, but also sometimes makes our sport a little bit difficult to understand, is that we have so many shows. And sometimes some week in the year we have up to 4 5-star shows. It's the biggest standard, 5-star. So you have 4 5-star shows at the same week. So it's difficult for the people to understand, you know, like if you compare with other sport, the day you have the Champions League, the best the football has to offer is there in front of your eyes. The same Sunday that you have the Formula One Grand Prix, there are other races, but the best are there in the Formula One. In our sport, you have 4 5-stars, everyone is going to have very good riders with very good horses, and 3 of the top 10 going to be there, 2 going to be there, 4 going to be there, and which one, you know, maybe it's not because a top 10 rider, if he's riding his number 3 horse, he's not going to be as good, of course, as someone who's maybe 25, but with his best horse. So it's a little bit difficult to follow this. But that's what's so special about the Grand Slam, is that if you see the starting list, you have really like the best that at this specific moment our sport has to offer.
Yes.
The best riders with a number 1 horse. And that's only 4 times a year.
Yes.
Because even a championship often doesn't have this level, because you have to be selected for a championship and you can only have, let's say, 3 in the Olympic Games, you know. And also in the World Cup final, you have to qualify, and some of the best miss the qualifier or whatever. So it's only 4 times in the year that you have the best riders with the best horses, and that's at this Grand Slam shows. So I would say that this is what stands out above everything, is the quality of the sport.
Yes, so everybody who is missing it this year should for sure be there.
You shouldn't miss it if you like our sport.
No, it's amazing. I'm really looking forward to it again. Well, Steve, thank you so much for your time.
Yes, you're welcome.
And what an amazing story. It was really nice to hear the background.
Thank
where
you.
People come from and what you've been through to get at this level. I'm sure you inspire a lot of little boys and girls who
that would be nice.
It's good.
Okay.
And good luck to you for
thank
the
you.
Rest of the weekend.
Thank you very
and,
much.
And this podcast was powered by the Dutch Masters. Thank you for listening. And I forgot one question. Where can they follow you if people want to see, follow you, your achievements? Is it social media, website?
Yes, actually, I'm not a big fan.
Your brother.
Social media, my brother, my wife, my mother. Steve Gerda is on social media, on Facebook and Instagram.
Mm.
And we have a website, stevegerda.com.
then they can see all the results, yes, what you've done. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Good luck to you. And thank you for listening.
Thank you.